You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, episode number 473. Blockchain and smart contracts are still in the early stages of a 20-year, if not 50-year, adoption and maturing cycle. Some have compared it to 1994 and the web. Brian Beckenoff.
Broadcasting from the back alley in Hollywood, it's the Indie Film Hustle Podcast, where we show you how to survive and thrive as an indie filmmaker in the jungles of the film biz. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome to another episode of the Indie Film Hustle Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Today's show is sponsored by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, how to turn your independent film into a profitable business. It's harder today than ever before for independent filmmakers to make money with their films, from predatory film distributors ripping them off to huckster film aggregators who prey upon them. The odds are stacked against the indie filmmaker. The old distribution model of making money with your film is broken, and there needs to be a change. The future of independent filmmaking is the entrepreneurial filmmaker or the filmtrepreneur. In Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, I break down how to actually make money with your film projects and show you how to turn your indie film into a profitable business. With case studies examining successes and failures, this book shows you the step-by-step method to turn your passion into a profitable career. If you're making a feature film, series, or any other kind of video content, the Filmtrepreneur method will set you up for success. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and of course, audiobook. If you want to order it, just head over to www.filmbizbook.com. That's film, B-I-Z, book.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T, chart. For quite some time now, I've been talking about niche audiences and filmmakers focusing on niche audiences, not only for one film, but possibly a group of films to build a career upon. And today's guest is a perfect example of that. We have film director and producer Torsten Hoffman, who is the producer and director known for Bitcoin, the end of money as we know it, and Cryptopia, Bitcoin, blockchains, and the future of the internet. Now, we discuss why he focuses on the Bitcoin blockchain tech community, why he started creating projects and products for that community. And on a side note, we had this wonderful conversation, not only about blockchain, but also about NFTs and its applications in the independent film space, which is a very, very interesting topic, to say the least. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Torsten Hoffman. I'd like to welcome to the show Torsten Hoffman. How are you doing, Torsten?
Thank you, Alex. Thanks so much. I've been following your work for a long time. This is an honor. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, you reached out and you've said you've listened to a lot of my podcasts and also read my book. And then I saw what you were doing, and I was very fascinated and wanted to kind of dig into the numbers of what you've been doing with niche marketing and niche filmmaking. So it's pretty cool, man. So, but before we get started, how did you get into the business?
Yeah, I'm coming from the evil side of the business, as you like to say. I used to be a television distributor, like a small shop that I opened in 2012 when 3D was the latest hot thing. Remember, like Avatar came out, everyone was producing a 3D, and I became like in the documentary market, one of those distributors specialized in 3D documentaries, and then switched quickly to 4K, did a lot in VR, virtual reality, and 360 videos as well. So I've been in kind of the emerging formats, a part of the documentary distribution business.
Oh, very cool. Now, you've decided to be a filmmaker who kind of chooses niches, and the niches of two films that you did were Bitcoin and blockchain, kind of like a high tech audience that you've kind of cultivated. Why did you choose, how and why did you choose that niche?
Yeah, I've heard some of your other guests say this, that it's kind of like your niche sometimes chooses you, or whatever the saying is. So for me, it was I have a little bit of a finance background. I heard about alternative currencies many years ago, then heard about Bitcoin, and it kind of clicked immediately for me because I had a little bit of a financial background and wrote a paper on alternative currencies in 2010. So when I heard about Bitcoin in 2013, it was immediately clear, wow, this is going to change the world. This is the project I should make my first film on. It was kind of like not much more thinking about this. And then later it turned out that was a really good idea, a really good time, 2014-15, to find this niche audience and create a fan base.
So tell me the films that you created for this niche.
Yeah, so the first one was Bitcoin, The End of Money as We Know It. I made it in 2014 with a partner, Michael, and released it in 2015. That was Kickstarter funded and self-funded, I would say mostly. It went viral on the internet and was doing okay on video on demand. And now 5 years later, or 4 or 5 years later, the new film is called Cryptopia, Bitcoin, Blockchains, and the Future of the Internet. So all the buzzwords are in it for searchability. And that one is much bigger. So much bigger production budget, supported by Screen Australia, supported by German broadcasters, and again, fans on Kickstarter and self-funded.
So those films, so let's get into the weeds a little bit. So with Bitcoin, obviously Bitcoin is one of those things that everyone's talking about, and it's, you know, polarizing one way or the other. People either love it, you know, it's the future, or people think it's a complete scam. I'm on the fence. I have no idea. It's like I see it go up and down. I'm like, you know, I would have liked to have bought it when it was $5. Like that one poor guy who's got like $70 million or something like that locked away. He forgot his code or something like that. So insane. But the whole concept of Bitcoin. First of all, how did you raise funds for it? You crowdfunded it?
Yeah. So we're talking about the first one now, right?
Yes.
Back in history, 2014. Yep. That was crowdfunding. Half of it crowdfunded, half of it my own money, let's say. Relatively low budget, lots of archive footage and interviews that I shot in 5 or 6 cities. Mm-hmm. So I should actually say I'm based in Australia. I'm originally German. And of course, a lot of the content is produced in America because that's where a lot of the industry happens. So usually we spread 3 continents, or with Cryptopia, even 4 continents. Yeah.
And did you start targeting and building your audience with the crowdfunding campaigns?
Yeah, that was exactly the start. And the way to do it, and I heard you say this before, just an idea will not get funded. So you need to show people something, right? So creating the first sizzle, to have some of the interviews, some of the drama already, and making the story maybe grander as it is, more dramatic as it is. Because just as you say, people love it and think this is like, you know, the best thing since sliced bread, or it's a total scam, right? And if you show that drama, you have some material, and that's how we funded the first Kickstarter campaign.
And now the whole concept of Bitcoin, I want to just kind of get into the weeds a little bit about Bitcoin, because the technology in itself is very utopia. Very kind of like, you know, Shangri-La, where like a decentralized currency. It sounds fantastic. Obviously, some people are taking it seriously. There is a lot of money in Bitcoin. There's a lot of serious players jumping in. What do you feel that was going to happen? Do you think, I mean, there is the only problem I have with Bitcoin is that there is no tangible value. It's a digital value. So it is like gold. It's digital gold. You know, there's a limited quantity, all that stuff, but it's all digital. So there's like, if the power goes out in the world, you've lost everything. But if you have a bunch of gold, and people could argue gold all day long, but it's still been money since since the beginning of time, there's something about gold and silver and those kind of things. But it's an asset. It's something you could physically hold. What do you? I'm just curious on your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, look, everything that you said is worth a whole show, and I've done these shows before by itself. Let me maybe not quite sure how to tackle it, but let me first say, in 2014, Bitcoin was a crazy thing. Nobody really took it seriously, except a few libertarian anarchists and like people who bought drugs on the internet. Totally true. Very risky. But that time, Bitcoin was still $200, right? I mean, those people who took risks were very well rewarded. It's $60,000 now, right? Today, if you look at it, it's actually been, so it has failed in a lot of use cases. For example, people don't really use it as a currency, right? I don't think you've paid for your last Amazon book or something on with Bitcoin, but it really has succeeded as this digital gold. And now every single investment bank, every single government, right, and some big companies are using it to put it on their treasury or something like that. So I think it's much less risky now and much more serious. Big money. It's now worth a trillion dollars.
Yeah, and it's only getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So you were able to tap into that phase. Have you seen a boost in people watching that documentary? Because it's been in the news pretty heavily in the last few years, and the just jumped up to like, you know, the heights, and it drops down. It's just so volatile. It's a very volatile thing. Can it be manipulated? Is it being manipulated? It's hard to manipulate something that has a price point of $60,000. You need big players to come in and manipulate that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, in 2014-15, sure, you can, like one rich whale, as they call it, can probably manipulate the price. But at the moment, it's so liquid. There's so many players all around the world. Coinbase, the largest crypto exchange in America, and the second biggest in the world, is going on the stock exchange, right? On the New York Stock Exchange this month or next month. And that company alone is worth more than NASDAQ and NYSE as individual companies already. So there's hundreds of millions of people using it and trading. So it's hard to manipulate. But to your earlier point, this is actually interesting, right? Because I chose a topic that people hate or love or just are confused about, so they need to get education about it. Every time it's in the press, right, I see a pickup in my video on demand revenues. And it's one of those topics that people just, you know, first time you hear it, it must be a scam. Second time, you know, who's trying to scam me, right? And then fourth, fifth, sixth time, maybe they watch a documentary and then they maybe dig deeper, right?
Right. And then, so the value of, so you are seeing a jump. Are you seeing it on Amazon? Have you been kicked off of Amazon yet? Or did you, because I know documentaries have been kicked off, and you know, where are you making most of your revenue from in the VOD space, AVOD or TVOD or SVOD?
Yeah. Again, two films, right? The old film was on Amazon, but then it was a victim of that company that we don't like to talk about, but you uncovered the scandal and the whole thing very well. Thank you for your journalistic work there. So I was a victim of that, and then got back in with FilmHub, both films actually via FilmHub onto Amazon, and then got kicked off. So that, because it's old, it's kind of, you know, lower budget kind of film, even though it did very well on Amazon. Most of my revenue, I think, came back in the day on Apple, and now a little bit on Vimeo. It's 5-6 years old, so now I've changed it to AVOD, and it has, I think, maybe 2 million views last year on YouTube alone, which is also a nice bunch of money, right? But with Cryptopia, award-winning film, brand new. That one, again, with FilmHub, is on the major platforms, and we're doing quite well on Amazon, and we're lucky not to be kicked off.
Yeah, exactly. So Cryptopia, now you've kind of like amplified that, but now you threw blockchain in there. You threw all these kind of keywords, which is extremely smart. So anyone, look, I've seen your documentaries come through my feed many a time, because I've done research on blockchain and research on Bitcoin and kind of going, just doing research just out of my own morbid curiosity about what blockchain is and the technology and the future of it and all that stuff. And you pop up and you have a great poster. It's a great, great poster, great title. And I was always curious on how you were doing financially. Yeah. Like, was it making money?
Well, you know, the calculation is always difficult, because if we were to calculate our own time, right?
No, 2 years of that's my it. Life, that, right? No, you can't. You can't do that.
You can't do that, right? But luckily, so for Cryptopia, I had many funding partners, right? So the German broadcaster came in; they get the German rights, but get me a bunch of production money. So that was good. Again, Kickstarter. That's non-dilutive capital, right? So I'm able to largely fund it with other sources, right? And then everything that's now coming in, not everything, but a large share of that is profit, if you will. But I'm also spending on Facebook ads. I'm also spending on film festivals and all these things that you keep talking about. And it takes a long time to build that audience and that platform.
Do you have a central hub where everything's coming in as far as like gathering customer information, emails, things like that? Or, you know, is an email a big thing for you? Or are you literally just staying out in the other platforms? Are you driving people to a website where you can capture their email so you can have a direct relationship with the customer?
Yeah, that's, you know, Alex, that is the key question. I mean, honestly, I'm probably doing a better job than average, but not good enough. And people listening to this, thinking about their filmmaking career, this is actually where you should start, your whole journey. So yes, I do collect emails. I might have maybe 4,000 email addresses by now, but most of the viewership, I just saw the statistics. We have 6 million minutes viewed on Amazon last month. So over a year, like, I don't know, 50 million minutes viewed. So it's a huge audience that is totally lost. So other than, you know, 5-star ratings and some of that, and a good IMDb score, I'm not really getting anything. I can't tap into that platform. But, you know, some people end up at cryptopiafilm.com. Some people do sign up for a newsletter. Some people then go to my Udemy course on blockchain. You know, that's one of the things that I took from your books as well. It's not that, the Udemy course doesn't make me rich, but it's just, you know, it's one of those little pieces of the puzzle. And please remind me to tell you about television distribution, because that is now kicking in, which is very, very promising as well.
So, yeah, tell me about the television distribution.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, even though that's kind of my background, this television market and the licensing, I didn't really quite understand it until now, that I always focused on making Cryptopia Film the best film possible for my audience, for those crypto nerds and those blockchain lovers, right? So it ended up being an 86-minute film. But the television market, they need a TV hour. So it took me much more time than it should have taken me reform it for the television audience. Television audience, much more mainstream, much less technical. You know, all the bullet points, all the technical details needed to be scrapped out. But now that I have finally have this TV hour, the deals are coming in. So we closed maybe 8 or 9 television deals, a total of 450 million TV homes. The biggest one is Al Jazeera. The biggest TV channel in Germany, they pre-bought the rights. But then, the top TV channels in Poland, in Russia, in Israel, and places like that. So, and all these license deals, they add up with nice license fees.
That's fantastic. Now, how are you reaching your audience? Are you doing any marketing? And are you driving people back to your website? Or are you just basically hoping that people watch the movie and then just come to Cryptopia.com?
Yeah, I mean, by now it's a lot of word of mouth, right? Because if, let's say, whatever that number is, maybe 50% of people that watch the film really like it because they are interested in the topic and they learn from it, right? And then they tell their friends and their family. So I think most of it by now is a word of mouth. I'm doing a little bit of on Twitter. I'm doing a little bit on Facebook. But I wouldn't say that I just started actually with Fire TV ads as well. There's a program where you can advertise on Amazon as well. But I don't think any of these marketing activities are actually ROI positive. So it's good for branding. So when you see, you've seen my films before, so clearly I've done something right, but it's not that $1 spent on Twitter or Facebook will get me $1.1 in VOD revenue. That doesn't work.
But if you had other revenue sources like a Udemy course, like something else that you could drive people into your ecosystem, and because this is a perfect example, I think that Cryptopia is a amazing case study. If you were able to have your entire marketing campaign driving people into a website where, because it's such a technical thing and such a thing, it's such a, people are very passionate about. So if you had a Bitcoin course, if you had a blockchain course, and if you had multiple different online products that could help with that, you become affiliates to Coinbase. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Whatever that is, to incorporate them into what they're looking for, the revenue that you can generate, the movie money is relevant. It's a loss leader at that point.
Yeah, and that's true. And every 50th person seeing it, right? They are a CEO of organization, or they run an association, or they're a university professor. So they start contacting me and say, "Let's do an event," right? And that event might suddenly bring me $500, right? So there's this effect as well. And another point that I really want to stress is this is not really about one film. It's more about like your whole career, like your body of work, right? I mean, you talk about this. Ryan Holiday has a fantastic book called Perennial Seller. It's all about building from one to the next. So I'm lucky. So I have Bitcoin, the End of Money. That's like a intro thing about money and Bitcoin. Now I have this blockchain, all the new development. My next one about the next technology, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, right? And what book authors do, for example, they have these series, right? And then they can discount when something new comes out, they can discount the earlier films and then sell it as a package. So you can do much more when you have more than just one film.
Now, do you have you thought of putting together a special edition where you put unedited interviews up in a course or in a special edition where people can buy, like people who are really interested? I'm like, hey, if you like the movie, here's 8 hours of unedited interviews with all of these experts and sell it. I've seen that work extremely well because, again, your audience is so passionate about that tech audience is first tech savvy. Secondly, generally, they're going to be a little bit higher. They're going to make a little bit more money. So they're going to be a little bit more affluent and willing to spend money on a digital product because their interest is digital products. So it's almost a no-brainer to create as many online products as you can and bring them into this ecosystem where you can – and considering, like you just saying, you're building a career around the technology space, doing like first was Bitcoin, now Cryptopia, and now your next film, you're building a library. You're building a bunch of stuff. You really could – be cleaning up, sir.
yeah, and I should be doing a better job at that. You know, I agree with everything that you just said, but I think there's three or four reasons why I want to be careful. So first of all, you don't want to be the person, just selling you whatever cryptocurrency, right? I mean, that would just hurt the reputation. That's number one. Number two is the process of making and interviewing the for the film and then having it marketed and now the shelf life of it is many, many years. So those interviews that I did back then are maybe not that relevant. Third point is there's so much free content, especially in that space, free podcast and video interviews. So I'm not sure how much value it can be, especially because it's kind of out of date. And the last point that I would make, documentary filmmakers know this, out of a 2-hour interview with someone super interesting, like a university professor or a billionaire investor or like a startup entrepreneur, out of 2 hours, you might really only be interested in 4 or 5 minutes. And for a film, you cut that into 2 times 20 seconds. This is the energy, the laugh,
I get you.
Right? And the rest might not be that useful.
But the Cryptopia interviews, I'm assuming, are all updated, right? Those are all up-to-date interviews, right? So that's all. There's some value there. I'd argue that you could put together, extended 30 or 40 minute interviews with all of the key people, package it all together. And the one thing you might underestimate, and this has turned into a coaching session, which is fine. I have no problem doing it for you. I think this is very educational for people listening. I feel that you're underestimating the emotional attachment to your film. Because when I watch a movie, I've been vegan for a long, long time. And I used to watch all those, like, fork over knives and food for thought and all those kind of
Cowspiracy,
all those kind of things, right? When I would go, after I watched the movie, I was so emotionally attached to the film because it gave me so much information about something I was emotionally attached to. That emotional attachment is extremely powerful. So if I watch Cryptopia and it's given me a lot of information about blockchain, about Bitcoin, about things that I'm passionate about, if I've gone online and I've gone to your website, the chances of me being open to purchasing something to extend that experience is extremely high. The close rate, if you will, would be extremely high, much higher than a cold lead that, I would be considered a hot customer, a hot lead, because I'm coming to your site to investigate what you are about, what else you have. And chances are that if you have something else for $49.99, $99.99, maybe a private coaching session about Bitcoin, maybe, a course about blockchain or Bitcoin, all these other products, if I'm going to be really game to probably go down that rabbit hole because I'm emotionally attached to you. So yes, there's 1,000 podcasts. and 1,000 other videos about stuff. And you know what? There is 1,000 other podcasts that teach about filmmaking. There's 1,000 other podcasts, 1,000 other books about filmmaking out there. But for whatever reason, you started listening to my podcast. Then you bought, which was free. Then you bought my book. And then went deeper down
the... And then I recommended it to 5 other people.
And it works. The concepts work. But then you got emotionally attached to the information I'm giving you because I'm helping you on your journey. So now there's an attachment to this. So all these other things that I might be able to come out with, like let's say I come up with a filmtrepreneur course, which I've been... should be doing, but I don't have time. But if I, like, after you read that book and you're like, oh, at the end, like, by the way, if you want to take the filmtrepreneur course, which we dive in deeper into all these techniques, what are the chances that you're going to go out and probably buy that? Do you see what I mean? So that's why I think you might be leaving a little money on the table, but that's just my opinion.
No, you're 100% right. It's also time management and things like that. Actually, your example about the vegan documentary, when I speak at film festivals or something like that, I always mentioned that as a perfect niche group because they're so passionate, right? And I think in your book, you had this example. I'm not sure, was it a cooking fork over knives, right?
They have like fork over knives. Family Food Matters has their own empire. The Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead juicing guy. He built an entire business around 2 documentaries, basically off of 1 documentary. And then he built out 2 other documentaries feeding that space. And then he's got coaches now and people who want to learn about juicing. And he has product placement deals with a juicing company. And it's built all this off of 1 fairly low budget documentary. It wasn't that great, but there's an emotional attachment. And that's when you're able to tap into emotion with a customer. That's why documentaries are so much easier to sell than a narrative film, because a narrative film, it's so much harder.
Yeah, and especially if you know your audience, and my audience luckily is also pretty clearly defined, and these are great examples.
So it's something that you might want to think about in the future. You know, because you already started doing it with the Udemy course, and it's like little bit by little bit. But I even literally in my book, if you remember, in my book, I use the book as a callback for you to go to my websites constantly throughout the book. I'm inserting, like, if you want more information, go to this link. Here's some more. Mm-hmm. And I have bonuses that I have on my website. And once I have you on my website, then I can further service you. I can provide more service to you, whether it's free, obscene amount of free content, obscene amount of free. I give away way too much content. But I give away a lot of free, but I'm like, if you want a little bit more here, you could pay for something.
So is there a good rule of thumb in terms of how often do you send out offers or promotions or an upsell email to your email list? Because isn't the fear that people will get annoyed and then unsubscribe? But I'm on the other side. I have 4,000 email addresses and I've never emailed them because this is all Cryptopia. Until my next film comes out in 2 years, I don't really want to make them get annoyed at me.
So what you would do is, if you have a list, you need to start building a relationship with them. So I would either be building content, whether that be videos about blockchain, conversations, bonus video interviews that you can post somewhere on YouTube and send it to them. Like, hey, or even better, post it behind a paywall, but you're giving it to them for free. And like, if you want to see more, come over here and we have a new, we got another 8 hours of this stuff. And you'll be surprised what you find boring out of that 2-hour conversation, somebody else might find fascinating. As long as there's value there, the end of the game is you've got to provide value to your audience. You've got to provide value to your customer. And as far as selling to them, the way I look at it, because my entire business is online and I have multiple brands and I do multiple things. I provide so much free value that's never a question. So I'm so far ahead of anybody else in my space in regards to the amount of content that I put out and at the quality that I put out that there's just no one that even comes close to me. It's just because I've been doing that for the last 6 years. So when I sell, I'll go, hey guys, we got a new course. If you're interested in distribution, I just did a 6-hour distribution course that will teach you how not to get screwed by distributors. And I took, and I did it personally, and it's me going through the whole thing. And that course has done extremely well for me. But at the end of the game, it's not about the money. That's the thing where a lot of people forget. That's where a lot of people fail, is because they're like, oh, I want to make money with it. I'm going to try to get money out of my audience. No, it's not that. How can I serve the audience? So your audience is looking for information about Bitcoin, about blockchain, about that kind of technology. I want to go deeper down that rabbit hole. I want to go deeper into the weeds about that. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show. So if I don't give it to you, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to go find it somewhere else. I'll buy someone else's course. So it's up to you. If you've got someone's attention, which you have a great calling card, which is your film, then it's your job to provide better service to me as the customer and give me what I'm looking for. Because if I'm going to your website off of a movie, and I actually took the time in today's world to search for you, and I land on your website and you don't have something to capture my email, you don't have some sort of free giveaway, you don't have a course or a special edition or coaching or courses or anything, a mouse pad that says Cryptopia on it, I don't know, whatever it is, I think you're just not only failing yourself, but you're failing me as a customer.
Yeah, because it's high intent, right? It's the highest intent you can ever have, that people come and search for your film or for you, and then you have to have product
and I honestly think trust me, and I've learned this over the course of my time doing what I do, is you've got to prioritize this. You have to prioritize creating product and creating value for your audience that they can pay for, because they want to reciprocate. They want to give back to you. And if you can help them along their journey, you know, as long as you're not, you know, stealing from them or like, you know, charging them obscene amounts of money or something like that for something that there's no value for. But if you're being fair with them and you're putting in your time, and I'm telling you, they'll be happy. So that 4,000 people on your list, I would right now just start emailing them like, hey, I just found this article. Even if you curate other people's content, other articles.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
You provide value to the audience. And then in that, you go, by the way, if you want to go deeper down the rabbit hole on blockchain, I just released this. If you've been giving away free content, when it's time for you to ask for something, it's what Gary Vaynerchuk says, you know, jab, 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 right hook. You give, ask. Give, ask. And that's the way it goes.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that's obviously coming up soon is that your world and my world will converge soon with the creator economy and blockchain technology enabling all sorts of new models, right, for filmmakers and creatives, including those NFTs that everybody's now talking about.
No, I was waiting for you to say NFT. I was just waiting to have a conversation about NFT. We'll get to it in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, no, at the moment, people talk about, you know, those little NBA clips or maybe a digital piece of artwork. But soon enough, filmmakers will NFT, mint their film and maybe even have the royalty streams all on the blockchain. So I think things like that will, let's say, give it a year time and this will become a real model for us.
So, all right. So for everyone listening, can you explain what the NFT is? Because now it is exploding after that $70 million art buy and the NBA. Mm-hmm. And I've been just watching YouTube video after YouTube video explaining to, I think someone's mentioned NFTs to me a little, like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then all of a sudden it has exploded in popularity and in the zeitgeist of society. Now everybody knows what an NFT is. And now everyone's like, wait a minute, what's going on? I'd love to, can you just explain what an NFT is for the audience?
Yes. So NFT stands for non-fungible token. And I will get to what it means a little bit later. But I think the best way to explain it is actually the major, major innovation that Bitcoin brought along. And Bitcoin is using its own blockchain as kind of like the database, is to create something that's digital, but also scarce, right? Before that, you can copy paste any digital file, anything that's available, copy paste. There's no value in anything digital because you can multiply it. With a blockchain, which is just a shared database that's run on computers all over the world, everybody agrees on the same database, who owns what Bitcoin in this case. And we suddenly have something that's unique and scarce, right? Something digital. In Bitcoin's case, it's money or digital gold, but it could be tied to something else. So what now people have been starting to do is they've basically tied the ownership or the right or the authenticity of a digital piece of art into the blockchain. And that's what's called as non-fungible. So there's only one unique one, a token. And there's now this craze going on about people buying into all sorts of NFTs from artwork to NBA moments to songs and soon surely movies as well.
Yeah, so that was the thing. So how would a movie work? So let's say I have my last film on the corner of Ego and Desire that I shot. Let's say I created an NFT for that. How would that work? Do I need to pull it off all the other platforms? Or has it become a piece of art? Maybe I put something special in it that there's only one of. And if someone buys it, are they buying it on the basis that I might one day explode as a filmmaker and the value of that goes up? So like if I would have bought the following, Chris Nolan's first film, his independent film as a NFT, and I own the NFT of the following, that I would imagine would be extremely valuable as a piece of art because it'd be like, oh my God, they own the first, like, yeah. But how would that work in a distribution way? Do I need to pull it off everywhere? How does that work?
Well, let me do a slight detour and then answer this. So I think the thing that will be more relevant for us filmmakers relatively soon is to use this technology as sort of like a royalty system. So let's say instead of doing a Kickstarter where people give you $10, but the filmmaker keeps all the rights to themselves, you could imagine that people buy shares in your film, just like they buy shares in Tesla, right? And then suddenly there's, let's say, 1,000 people are your investors, right? And then whatever that film makes, it's all recorded and then paid out in real time to your 1,000 investors. So I think that as a crowdfunding mechanism, we will see this happening. That's not an NFT per se, but that is something I think maybe a little bit easier to understand, right?
Stop right there for a second. So, okay. Mm-hmm. So I've made my movie. I've crowdfunded it through 1,000 people. Now, how am I generating the revenue? That's not off of Amazon views. Like, is that people buying that movie? How is the money being generated?
So I think, I don't know, in the past year or maybe 2 years, I've probably seen a dozen platforms, usually based in Los Angeles, who kind of do this as a service for filmmakers. They say, okay, put your film here, and we monetize and then pay you out or pay however many investors you have in whatever share you have. It's sort of similar to what musicians have done for the longest time, right? The songwriter gets X percent and there's collecting societies and this and that and this. And I think for the movie industry, we'll soon see this. But this has nothing to do with an NFT. NFT, so your question was kind of different. So NFT is basically you sell the ownership kind of like to one person, to your film. And the idea is if your film becomes a global viral hit and everybody talks about it, the value of it goes up, right? So that's why there's people, because he's a celebrity, people think, well, his notoriety and his virality and his being famous is just going to increase and increase. So that's why his body of work, including that one, will increase. So it's kind of like a speculative buy on this thing. And what there's like this saying in this creator economy that says, well, we're starting to monetize memes. So maybe it's a tweet, maybe it's an idea, maybe it's right. A film, maybe it's a song, and you can now make money with it. You can sell it.
That's insane. All right. So if I made my movie and I sold it to you, so you buy my movie's NFT for $5,000. Let's just say. Now you own the rights to that movie and you could do whatever you want with it, or you just own the right to the NFT and I can still continue to sell it and do other things with it.
And this is where, you know, you shouldn't buy all the BS that's in the industry, because what do you actually own, right? Especially when it comes to a painting, right? The painting is something physical, and you only have like this digital receipt that you own. So you have to be very careful. And that's why I say I don't think this is quite ready, especially for filmmakers. So these marketplaces are starting to get real traction for artwork. So just a piece of, you know, a digital poster or maybe some GIF, right? But for film, this doesn't really exist yet. Plus, we also need platforms that we trust, because if you sell me an NFT on your website and then you go to a different blockchain and here, I mean, I wouldn't trust that process yet. But maybe in 1 or 2 years, that's going to be much more mature as an industry.
Got it. Okay. But so in theory, let's say that we create an NFT for my film On the Corner of Ego and Desire. There's going to be a physical representation of that NFT, because I've seen physical representations of it for some of the more higher end art where they actually send you a package and there's like a digital, like a little, like an iPad, I guess, or something like that they give you. So you feel like you own something and it's not just a digital thing. Like when you spend that guy who spent $69.7 million for that insane NFT, there is value, and I saw what the art was, and the guy had been doing it for 13 years, and it's a collage of all his art. Like I get it. I don't know if it's worth $70 million, but I get it's not a tweet that was sold. It's not a banana taped on the wall kind of artwork. So let's say we figure out a way to basically give an iPhone that plays my movie in a very special bulletproof sealed case that I ship to you because you've paid $5,000 for it, and you now own the only NFT of that film. Now, my move, just like Van Gogh's work or just like other artists, there's multiple copies of it. And it's everywhere. It's not like you're the only one. You have the original, but you don't have all the copies that are being sold all over the world. So the only two questions I have for you then is, one, you have the original. So you have the bragging rights to say, I have the only NFT of this film. And by the way, Alex just won an Oscar for his latest movie, right? Shooting for the Mob. And his latest movie for Shooting for the Mob, he just won an Oscar for it. How much does somebody want to pay me for On the Corner of Ego's Desire? Now you go put it back on the marketplace and you sell that for $1 million, let's say. And after that $1 million, I get 10% of that $1 million as the original artist automatically, and you get 900,000, and now the new owner has that piece of art, which is the film. I guess I can, because if I'm selling you my art, I'm not selling you the copyright to the art. I'm selling you the print, the limited edition version of it. It's its own product that cannot be replicated. Yeah. And there is no other NFT. So there is scarcity in it. So like, if it is a piece of art, like that guy who sold the $70 million. Mm-hmm. I assume that there's versions of all of that art that he sold all over
the place. Yeah, because that would make it more valuable, right? The more this piece of art is in virtual reality universes and you know, newspapers, the more it gets talked about, just like with the big Picasso paintings or whatever, the more valuable, the more famous it gets, right? I mean, I think there's no doubt about it. But what you just mentioned, actually, I should have mentioned myself, so thanks for that. One of the key inventions here is not that this digital thing is suddenly worth something because it's a unique non-fungible token. The invention here is also that you, as the original creator in that smart contract, can always be compensated. Because in the traditional art world, right, so the artist sells it for $1,000 to the art gallery, and the art gallery makes $1 million, but the original artist will never see any of that million. But with this digitized kind of proof of chain of title, you can always get that kickback of 10%, which makes you and a lot of other creators join these marketplaces, right? And then the community of investors comes along because suddenly it's a thing. So I guess what I'm saying here is with these emerging things, there's not like one silver bullet. It just doesn't happen overnight. But look at Fortnite. Fortnite is a multi-billion-dollar economy, right? People buy swords or capes or whatever on Fortnite. And Bitcoin, another digital good, right, that maybe 100 million people all over the world now own, and it's worth $1 trillion. So it's not just one thing. The whole puzzle piece must fit together.
There is a place for independent film. There is a place for film somewhere in this ecosystem, in this economy. I think you're right. We're still a few years away. I think it's going to take a minute to get there, but I think there is something there that, look, I've been saying it from the top of the mountain for a while now. The system is broken. The distribution system is broken for filmmakers, and for artists in general. And there has to be some sort of change. And I think that blockchain, Bitcoin, that technology is the future. There's no doubt about it. There's just no doubt about it that it's going to be the future. What that future is, though, is going to be the question. Who's going to crack that nut? Because that nut's going to take a minute to crack. And there's people working on it as we're speaking right now. But once it's cracked, it could really change the game for us as independent artists. Because right now, like you just said, you're getting kicked off of Amazon, and you were being insulted with one penny per hour of viewing. It was an insult. I mean, if they could pay you fractions of a penny, they would have. So even at that point, they're like, yeah, you're still not good enough and still not going to be there. So to have this ability to be able to be paid every time the art gets sold again and again and again in perpetuity, this is all going to constantly be coming in. It sounds very utopia as for artists. I mean, it sounds extremely utopia-like. But yeah,
maybe even cryptopia, maybe
even a cryptopia, sir. If I may take a very popular film's name title. I think you are doing great, great stuff, with your films and what you're thinking of. I'm assuming there's an NFT movie coming out soon. If not, you should be working on it right now.
Well, you need to provide me with some drama. So either you become the first independent billionaire, independent filmmaker billionaire, or you lose your whole empire with some sort of hack.
And that's the thing. And that's the way for people listening who are not really familiar with blockchain. There is no way to hack this. There hasn't been a hack for this yet, is there? It is as secure as anything that's ever been invented, purely because it's so transparent, right?
Yes, the big blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum are virtually unhackable for sure. Otherwise, somebody would take this $1 trillion value immediately out. So that's impossible. However, I mean, be careful. Yeah, you can lose your private keys, or you can trust it to a third party, right? You trust it to a Bitcoin bank, to these cryptocurrency exchanges, who of course can be hacked. So it's always a little bit tricky. That's part of the story in my film. So we are kind of getting rid of middlemen, the banks and the governments, but we're creating other dependencies and new elites, crypto elites, right, that we have to trust on. So and there's always human nature and greed, you know, all these kind of elements that make the film fun to watch.
So right now, if you purchase a Bitcoin, it needs to stay in a Bitcoin bank. It can't just live in an account. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, good question. So you go to a central service like blockchain.com or coinbase.com in America. But the common practice among people who, you know, are really into this technology and movement is to then store it just by yourself. So literally, you can just basically remember your passcode, which is 12 security words, or you write down your private key and do not rely on a third party. So that's the whole point of it. But most people don't do that. Most people keep it on exchange, and those exchanges can be hacked.
Got it. So that's the problem. So, and that's where that guy who's got like 70 million or 100 million, whatever ridiculous amount that because he started off early on, he lost his number and he lost the hard drive that had that key, and yes, he can't get at. So he literally
it's impossible
for him to get that back. He can't call anybody. There's no support number. So there are those risks involved. Like, imagine if you had $100 million worth of gold in a vault that can never be opened. It's essentially what he's got.
True. But I mean, look, if you try to tell me that gold is better, you know, it's like the people that try to leave Venezuela with their last savings in a few gold coins, they get stopped at the border and the police takes that gold away, right? And with Bitcoin, you can cross the border with 12 words in your head, right? Whether you're in North Korea or in America, no, it's permissionless, right? So it's always pros and cons.
There's pros and cons with all of it. And also, like, you know, you can walk into any, you could basically go anywhere in the world right now with a gold coin and get cash because it's gold. If they can prove it's gold, gold is accepted pretty much everywhere on the planet. Bitcoin isn't just yet. So there's pros and cons for all, but you're right. You can, like, how are you going to walk out with, let's say, $60 million worth of gold? You're not walking out. You're not walking out with it unless gold skyrockets to $100,000 an ounce. You're not walking out with that much gold. Mm. But you can walk up with that, with crypto.
And look, the other element here, and that's why it's becoming bigger and bigger, right, is the idea that all the governments, including the Fed in America, are printing trillions and trillions of dollars. Oh. And look, whether you're a fan of wars or Social Security or COVID relief fund, no matter your politics, there's just, you know, the chart of money supply is just going like exponentially up, right? And in that environment, the value proposition of a very finite amount of Bitcoin that actually gets less and less every year is the appeal. That's why it has become sort of like a digital gold potentially. Yeah,
and there's mining right now. There's people mining as we speak, trying to find the other Bitcoin out there. And there's like, I've saw your documentary. I've seen so many others that there's farms. There's like mining farms that just use an obscene amount of power. Just to just constantly hack until they find, not hack, but, you know, mine until they get a Bitcoin, and they get so many Bitcoins a day. But if you get 3 Bitcoins a day, that's 180 grand, in current market. But it costs you maybe 50,000 power that day. Like, it's obscene. Like, you know, the infrastructure, all that stuff. Yeah.
And that's actually a good note, because a common criticism, a valid criticism against Bitcoin, that is a blockchain that runs on this proof of work system. So you need powerful mining computers, which consume a lot of energy. However, you just mentioned that the trick is you need to be ultra efficient. The more energy you have, the more computing power, the more of these Bitcoin rewards you're going to find. That means those mining farms are usually located where the price of energy is cheapest, which is wind farms, solar farms, geothermal. So they are basically not in the city. They're kind of where the power generation is. And the cheapest power generation nowadays is solar in, I think, 120 countries in the world. So yes, it is energy intensive, but it is a little bit greener than maybe, you know, the Skype call that we use.
Oh, it's also probably greener than mining for gold. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Mining for gold has become so, so difficult and so, so expensive and just hurting. I mean, because they have to go dig deeper to find it. So it's a fascinating conversation. I think we've gone a little bit off topic, but I think this was a really good conversation. There was one thing I wanted to ask you. There was another movie you did, and we talked a little bit about this before we got on, called Marketing the Messiah, that you did as a production. And you were telling me that didn't really find its home yet. Can you talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure. So Marketing the Messiah is a film that I reached out to a podcaster, history podcaster, and he has a good network and a good platform for history nerds, I would say. And so he made this film as a director and writer, his first film, and I was the producer on the background. And I had actually high hopes for the distribution of it because I knew it's a topic that might be interesting to people who want to know about the real story of the first couple of years of Jesus's kind of work before, you know, the whole religion was built around him. But for some reason, I mean, look, it's always hard to kind of understand it completely, but the film was too long for TV. I mentioned that earlier with Cryptopia. Also, maybe too controversial for American audience especially. So we have lots of 10 and 9 stars on IMDb's, but also quite a few 0 and 1 stars. So maybe that also hurts the distribution. And so what we're doing now is AVOD. So we are on IMDb TV. We're doing a little bit of Amazon and now YouTube. That's the way to go for this one.
Right. And the thing is, when I saw the trailer for it, I was like,
First of all, I'm fascinated. I can't wait to watch it. But because I'm into that kind of stuff. I love marketing, and I'm like, arguably, Jesus is one of the best marketed, people in history. I mean, you can't argue. I mean, literally, when the Vatican is hiring Michelangelo to paint, you know, I mean, that was the marketing of its day. So I was fascinated with it. But when I saw it, I was like, who the hell's the audience for this? Because people who are believers and follow Christianity are not going to probably want to see it. Maybe a few will, but not a lot. And then who is the audience? So I think that's where you kind of fell into the, like, who are we targeting here? It's a little bit – it's not as easy as Cryptopia, which is like, okay, here's my audience. Here's the thing. It's done. Where this is a little bit different.
Yeah. At the same time, I mean, it's so tempting to make these assumptions or analyze it after the fact. But I mean, I just recently rewatched Searching for Sugar Man, right? This totally unknown 60s singer. Nobody has heard of it. A fantastic story, fantastic film, won the Oscar. But who would have thought that before you make this, who's the audience for this? Right? There's three people in South Africa, right? And Bad Bunny became the biggest hit of the year. So it is a little bit tricky, that one.
I think the thing that it's just a comeback. It's like a comeback story. It's Rocky with a musician, you know, and the whole search and the hunt, and it's like, oh my God, and all that. It's just such a brilliant. If you haven't seen Searching for Sugar Man, please do so. Mm-hmm. But you're right though. It could have just fallen flat on its face, and you know, it could have been huge in South Africa where he was huge. And that's essentially it. So you really don't know. But I think something like Cryptopia is so specific, and you really understand who that audience is. And I'm going to bet better than not that it's going to reach an audience, because that audience is very hot right now. It's very interested. It's kind of like if you did a documentary on CompuServe and the future of AOL. Like, that probably wouldn't hit really well today. It might have hit well years ago, but it wouldn't hit well today. I appreciate you coming on the show. Let me ask you a few questions I ask everybody. What advice would you give a filmmaker trying to break into the business today?
Just start. Start with something small. Start on TikTok, start on Instagram or YouTube. That's the nice thing about our age, that you don't really need much budget or much skill, so to speak. There's so much available for free.
What lesson took you the longest to learn in the film business or in life?
I'm going to give a different answer here, a counterintuitive one. My partner, Michael, told me about Cryptopia that don't be afraid to put your personality in the film and on the film. So it is kind of the journey of me asking these people controversial questions about my own confusion, my own excitement, and I became the host of the film, which was never the idea originally, but I think it was a good decision, and it helped the film, and it helped my profile right, and hopefully will build my platform later. So I think that one took me a long time to learn.
That's the only secret sauce you have, brother, is you. Like, that you are the NFT of yourself. Like, there is no, you are non-fungible. There is no other you in the world. So that's what, as artists, that's the only currency we have in our art, is to put ourselves into it and express who we are, because there's nobody else.
But that's what Americans do so much better than the rest of the world, right? I mean, you're so much better at the self-promotion bit, and I wasn't, but it was, for me, it was the right decision, and I assume for many independent filmmakers it will be. And if you look at those big Netflix deals nowadays, did Kanye not just sell like a $30 million documentary to Netflix or something? I mean, this is all about like big egos, big personalities with a big platform. And you have to be someone to get those kind of big deals, right?
Yeah, I haven't gotten mine yet, but I'm hoping for my $30 million deal with Netflix. It's coming soon. It's coming soon. And lastly, what are three of your favorite films of all time?
I'm going to go with Matrix. I'm going to go with Inside Job, about the financial crisis. And, just something Star Trek, something like positive sci-fi kind of, everything is good. Humanity is striving towards a better future.
I think the combination of Matrix and Inside Job is a perfect, perfect Cryptopia origin story. It's really, really great. Torsten Fan, thank you so much for being on the show, man. It's been a pleasure having you. And I look forward to seeing your next films and what's up, what's going to happen to our whole business with this technology. So I appreciate you shining some light on it, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Pleasure watching your work and you grow. And we'll be in touch maybe next year and talk about NFTs or whatever.
I want to thank Torsten for coming on the show and sharing his filmmaking journey with the tribe today. Thank you so much, Torsten. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to watch his films Bitcoin and Cryptopia, head over to the show notes at indiefilmhustle.com/470. And guys, I'm really interested in this whole NFT thing, and we will be having some episodes coming up in regards to covering NFTs and its applications for independent film and filmmakers. So keep an eye out for that. Thanks again for listening, guys. As always, keep that hustle going. Keep that dream alive. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Indie Film Hustle podcast at IndieFilmHustle.com. That's IndieFilmHustle.com.